Welcome to The Leader's Edge. I'm H.R. Huntsman, your host and the founder of Leader's Edge, the creator of Leader's Edge Performance Engine, and Leader's Edge University. We strongly believe that by interrogating reality, provoking creativity, and inspiring change, we can empower great leaders and their teams. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please go to podcast.yourleadersedge.com. All right, let's get into this. Jackie, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I really appreciate you taking your time to be with us.
Yes, I'm so happy to be here. I always love our conversations.
Absolutely. So I just want to jump right into it. I want to take you back to a time where you and I are meeting and you sit down across the desk from me and you plop down this big stack of paper and you say, H, I bought a cabinet shop. What the heck drives? I want to hear about your drive to entrepreneurship. That's just one of the hilarious stories that you and I have together. What drives that?
I have always known that I would be a business person. I remember being really little. I have four sisters, and I remember my sisters telling me, Jackie's going to be a businesswoman. And we weren't even old enough to know what that meant. And I just knew that was what it was going to be. And I think entrepreneurship is such an adventure and it's so exciting to me. And I'm always drawn to the challenge and the excitement of it. But business in general has always made more sense to me than most things in my life. More sense sometimes than people and relationships and challenges in general. So business just feels comfortable for me and something that I always want to jump into. And oh my gosh, when we met, I was in just overwhelm and chaos with running the CPA firm. I started Michaels and Associates when my daughter was born, a couple months after she was born, so that I could escape the kind of rat race of public accounting and working long hours, wanted to spend more time with her. So I started the CPA firm doing accounting, consulting, bookkeeping. And it was just really a difficult thing to find a groove with, figuring out my vision for that. I don't think I could find clarity on where I wanted to take Michaels and Associates. And one of my clients at the time was Andrew's Fixture Company. So it was this 100-year-old manufacturing company in Tacoma. And I would go in every week and work with the owner. They had some chaos with their books, and their bookkeeper needed help getting things cleaned up. And he asked me if I would buy it. And I was like, absolutely not. I know nothing about this. That doesn't make sense to me. We don't have anything in writing. And so over lots of months developed this plan. And I think that when I was in that tangible space in the warehouse, seeing the machinery, seeing the team, it solidified the vision and the dream for what I've always been trying to build through entrepreneurship, which is like the ultimate place to work, where everything is good. Cumulatively taking all of my bad experiences in my career working for, whether it's corporate America or a small company or what it is, all those bad experiences and not having that exist in the space. So I think just physically seeing it was like, oh, I can see what I want to do with this place. So I was like, all right, I'll buy it. And didn't tell you anything about it until I had it all in writing.
Right.
And I slid this purchase and sale agreement across the table, and you're like in total disbelief that this is what we're doing. So I think it was the excitement, the opportunity, but something about being in a physical space really solidified vision.
There's so much that I want to unpack here. Let's go back a little bit. You said you've always known you wanted to be in business. If we were to look at the clues, the breadcrumbs, where would we go back to the little girl who's running a lemonade stand or a paper route? Or what clues would we see that this is seeded in your DNA somehow?
I don't like when anyone tells me what to do.
I can't work for somebody.
And I loved it when somebody would tell me no, because I would be like, great, I'm going to do it. Tell me I can't do it. Then I'm going to dig in and do it. So there was that. Yeah, I don't like when anybody tells me what to do. And there's a big part of me that always feels that whatever I want is possible. Okay. Not without sacrifice, not without compromise, not without hard work, pain, heartache, whatever it is. But everything that I want in this life that I'm trying to build and design for myself, I've always felt like is achievable no matter what anybody tells me. So it's difficult to be an employee when that's how you feel. So
let's talk about that first leap, because after you make that first leap, other leaps become easier. The first leap being for you leaving corporate accounting, leaving a corporate W-2 position, opening Michael, CPA, your first entrepreneurship. Tell me about the courage to do that. What did that feel like? Did it feel like you're jumping off a cliff, or did it feel like this is just a natural extension of who I know I am?
Both.
Both things are true.
I love this leap. One of my favorite things is when people call me and they're like, I need some accounting help or some guidance. I'm going to start this business. And there's so much fear and courage, and there's all these things wrapped up in it. So I love this. I think that I knew I would always make that leap. So it didn't feel so much courageous as I had spent 10 years, 12 years leading up to that point, preparing and being undeniably the best at whatever I was going to do for this business. So became a CPA and was wandering through this career path, and then realized there's an opportunity where I could do this in a way that I would make more money for my family. I would be home with my family more often, and there would be no ceiling. I could work on whatever I want to work on every day, design the life that I want to live. So it was like I spent these years just preparing. And there's that saying about luck is opportunity and preparation, those two meet. So if you spend all the time preparing to be undeniably the best, excellent at this, and then the time comes up where the opportunity is there and you're like, okay, this is it. And it was so clear when I had my daughter and tried to go back to work that it just was, there was a misalignment in me. I could feel it, right? As a human being, this is not it for me. And so that was the opportunity and the aha moment of the, oh, I've been preparing for this. Now I'm ready. I think the difficult, scary part was I had a 16-week-old baby in my arms and a mortgage, not a whole lot of savings coming off of 12 weeks of unpaid maternity leave. It was very scary. So I wrote this note on an 8x11 piece of paper and put it on my fridge. And it was like every week I had 3 network meetings. I had 1 contract I would need to get signed, and I would have 3 new attempts to network and contact with people. And I did that for a month, and I've not had to do it again. And it was just, I was able to do it. But the financial piece was the most terrifying. Right. There's no security.
Yeah, right. So you had your first big leap. So your first big leap was in your skill set, which was accounting. Your second big leap with Andrews is in a cabinet shop, where you know nothing about manufacturing or woodworking. So that's an entrepreneurial leap, which you knew how to make, but you had no clue how to run a cabinet shop. So tell us about that leap to buy and then learn to run Andrews.
Yeah, this brings up something you and I talk a lot about as far as you plant seed. The seeds that are blooming now are seeds that we've sown so long ago. And
yeah.
Andrews popped up, and I had developed this network of people and small business and all different industries and contacts. And when I started asking and name dropping essentially to the people at Andrews, like, oh, I know that person. I know this person. So I was starting to build this resource network of people that knew about the industry, about the machines, about sales, what we were doing. And through starting the firm, it was never just bookkeeping. I was always involved in people's process development because they would be doing something just so inefficient. And so I was ended up doing all this business process redevelopment, right? Streamlining things, changing things around, making it better. And so I learned so much just about business in general. And again, business just makes sense to me. It's a series of all of these processes that feed things through and create jobs, and simply put. But so Andrews I felt like I could do it. I was a small piece of a pie. And I thought, I have the dream and the vision. And if I can fill in the gaps, what's my value, right? What do I bring to the table? And if I can fill in the gaps around me, then this is the opportunity to really build the workplace that I'm dreaming about having for people.
How long did it take you to earn respect, credibility as a female in a male-dominated industry, not knowing anything about Andrews or cabinetry? Or how did you win over the team, build trust, and build respect?
That was an interesting journey. They really respected the man that I bought it from. And so there was some just by osmosis and by him saying they trusted his decision. So if he was choosing me, there was a reason why, even if they couldn't see it, which is great leadership, right?
Yeah.
They believed in it and that decision. what was the hardest part to deal with was the fear. So I started focusing more on what is driving the behavior that may be resulting in, you know, dislike toward me or attitude toward me or lack of acceptance of me. And it was always fear. I mean, that's terrifying. They know that they're at huge risk of me coming in and cleaning house and just a series of building trust. It is a male dominated industry. I like to think that I primarily focus on excellence, undeniably being the best human, the best boss, the best skill wise at everything that I can, and finding the best and seeking the best, connecting with the best. So it felt like somewhat of a rebuilding the culture. And then whenever you're rebuilding a culture where there's a new vision, you lose people. So there's people that trickle in and out. And I don't know that there were many instances where I felt that I wasn't taken seriously or I was at a disadvantage. I think the biggest shock for people was she knows nothing about cabinetry. And that was something I did have somebody ask me at one point, like, nothing about cabinetry. How can you possibly expect to be successful? And it was like, I can build a team. I can build an incredible team around people that do know cabinets. There shouldn't be necessarily a reason why I need to be the expert at cabinets. Yeah.
That's so good. I wrote down some notes for my recap. Pursuing excellence, being undeniably the best. And that piece right there is gold about, I don't need to know anything about cabinets. I need to know how to build a team of exceptional cabinet makers. And so building the team is the goal, not building the cabinets.
Yes, exactly. I think, especially in the last few years, I've spent so much time just figuring out who I am and what my value is, but also what my gift is, what my primary gift is. What do I bring that actually ends up producing momentum, money, whatever it is, that special sauce that everybody has.
Yeah.
And I take that and I see that as 10% of the Andrews pie chart. And then I have the rest of my teammates and I pick them based on their individual gift to fill in that pie chart until it's full, because I quickly realized if I am trying to do it all, I'm not doing it well. I don't have any family time. I'm the typical stressed out entrepreneur running all over. But it's also humbling to admit that I'm 10%, I'm one small slice of this pie. But what happens when you select a team, you curate this team of people, and they're all doing what they were really born to do, natural innate gifts, when you can help them see that and pull it out of them and foster an environment where that becomes really powerful. You imagine a team where everyone's doing just that thing that they were born to do. It's exponential success, exponential momentum. And it's easy because everyone's, I like this because it comes natural to me. I feel good. I feel fulfilled. I feel powerful.
That's one of the things I wanted to talk about the most with you that I want to share with the listeners of this is, I know you want to build something pretty special because I know you pretty well. You want to build something pretty special. For you, it's not about building cabinets. I know that to be the case. So talk about that, unpack that more, the kind of place you want to build, the kind of culture you want to build. Like for you, I know that's the deal. Talk to us more about that.
Yeah, I have this belief that I've held so close and so private for so long that business can be both so human and we can care so deeply about people, but we can also hold people accountable and have firm boundaries that results in profitability. It has to. One can't exist without the other. I can't take care of people and create a place for them to work and get paid and have a good living wage if my business isn't profitable. And it's hard to draw a line between the two sometimes. How does doing this end up equating to profitability? And that's the piece of feedback and telling people how, holding people accountable, even when it's hard, even when they have a life crisis, they've still got to show up and perform. So this dream of a workplace that people actually want to show up at, that doesn't feel like something they go home and complain about, a lot of that is just removing all the barriers of things that we can't say to our boss, that we can't say to our teammates. It's learning how to give feedback. So there's no barriers to movement, lateral, forward, whatever that movement is, and things get accomplished so much more quickly. We can honestly have conversations about what's working and what's not and fix it, which results in profitability. So that's my dream, is this blend of two things can be true. We can care really deeply for people. I can see you as a person first. So when we have difficult conversations with our teammates, so per se performance is lacking, we're having a conversation, it always first is the depth of what's happening with you personally. What's personally going on in your life? And maybe you don't have to give me details, but the emotions always come up. And if we're not tending to the emotions, then they backfire and they result in the performance issues. So a lot of times there's this unpacking of, I've got all these things going on, and there's this aloneness, and they're not sharing it with anyone. So we go through that, and then we move over to the performance indicators. And if the reality is that you're struggling, so here's what we're going to do. What does it look like for us to make sure that we're still meeting those performance indicators? Because no matter what, our goal is to protect the team. So if someone's struggling, it impacts the team, drags the team down. So there's this really careful balance of tending to the humanity, but holding a hard line with, it's affecting the team, and I need you to get it together. This is what we're going to do to support you, but you're protecting the business, which is how we all have jobs.
This is amazing. So the way I wrote it down in my notes, building a place that honors humanity and accountability at the same time. What do you do with the person who's listening to this and says, oh, that touchy-feely crap, these millennials, these Gen Zers, man, back in my generation, I'd run through a wall and breathe fire and blah, I don't need all this crap to perform. Just you pay them a paycheck, lady. Come on. Well, they should just do it for the paycheck. How do you respond to that as you're building this place of meaning and purpose and humanity and accountability? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. And to me, and sometimes I experience that. You and I have had meetings where can people just do their jobs? And that's always a symptom of a problem. When I feel that in myself, I'm not taking care of me, I'm not figuring out where I'm not setting boundaries, I have resentment. It comes up as resentment. But the bigger question is why not? Why aren't we? It doesn't take any more time or energy to tend to those emotions. It's wrapped into whatever we're doing. You can't carve out humanity from business. And I think that's what I feel so strongly about in the last handful of years. A lot on the CPA firm side, what we bring that's so special to our clients is the connection. It's never just about your numbers. I know my clients so intimately that I know that their grandma is sick, that their child is ill, that they're needing to pull money out for fertility treatments, that I'm the first person they called when they found out some money went somewhere it shouldn't have gone, or they didn't know what to do. You're the first person I called, I didn't know who to call. We have this relationship that's so much more than just a bookkeeper, and it's because I care. I really do. I give a crap about my clients, but I ask them what's going on with you personally, because I see a direct correlation between what you're wrestling with personally and the decisions that you're making in your business. When I see you continuing to make these decisions, and I tread lightly with it till I have a solid, comfortable relationship with that client, then I say, what's happening personally that's driving this decision? Because we know that it's not serving your business. Why do you continue to make that? And it's the same with work. How can we possibly pretend that our personal life doesn't impact how we're performing at work? So it has to change. We can't do one or the other. They're in combination.
I love how you said we can't continue to carve out humanity from business. I love how you said that. How do you protect yourself as you're caring for these people and getting emotionally involved and asking them about their parents or sickness or whatever? How do you not get overwhelmed emotionally by carrying all their stuff? Because that's what a lot of these, that other generation would say. They would say, you don't have time for that. And that's really just armor. They're really just trying to protect. So how do you do that without getting bogged down emotionally yourself?
I choose to see everyone as really capable. I don't allow myself or the people I work with to be victims in anything in their life. And I think when you finish a difficult conversation with someone you really care about deeply and they're struggling, it is painful. You feel that emotion. But I tell myself that at the end of that conversation, this person is fully capable of overcoming this. and will. And the fact that they've shared it with me means that they will. Nobody's alone. We're getting through things together. They have some feedback and a different perspective. So I choose to see them as capable. And that feels like a healthy boundary for me. I don't ever feel like I have to fix it. I know what my role is. My role is to make sure the numbers are good. This is my job. I'll ask, is there anything I can do to support on the accounting side? But they're capable.
Okay.
I've seen them get through things. They'll get through this too.
Someone listening to this may be thinking, this lady has it all together. She's amazing, which you are. But this has been a climb for you. Mm-hmm. There's lots of peaks, but there's been some valleys here as well. And mm-hmm. you fought through some stuff. As much as you care to share, tell us about the fights, the challenges that you had to come to where you are.
Yes, I have fought depression, severe depression, mental health challenges, and that along with dysfunctional relationships, divorce when my daughter was three, difficulties in identifying my own poor choices and behaviors in life and in business. And we talked briefly about overcoming adversity, and I had this thought about, I don't feel that I qualify as someone who you would say has overcome adversity, because I think I see all of the roadblocks or obstacles in my life. I don't see them as impossible or something I can't do. I feel I'm never the victim in that, even at the depths of depression and mental health challenges. I feel that through and with other people, we can move through those. And that was really the gift of you when we met. I still remember you saying that this isn't it for you. And that was just at the depths of being in that ditch of despair and depression, and learning that we have to build a network of people around us, a community of people around us. And executive coaching is a huge part of that, personally and professionally, moving around over through roadblocks. But I've never been standing at the bottom of a mountain of obstacles and thought, this is too much for me. I think there were maybe moments of that clinically needed to be tended to, right? And seeking help for that and finding ways to get through that, to get to a healthy place. But having other people around you, I just saw it differently. I can get through it. I can endure.
Nice. How old's Princess Lily now?
10. She'll be 11 in July.
So I met you when she was really small. I call her Princess Lily. Lily is Jackie's daughter. What do you want? What do you want? It's a legacy question. What do you want Lily to say about mommy?
Legacy.
And hold on. Let me even, I'll use Lily as a avatar, because I know you want to impact other young women, especially in business. What do you want Lily and all the Lilies of the world to look up and say this about mommy or Jackie or your impact or the legacy or the impact you have on young women?
I would love for my daughter to also believe that she can design and achieve any type of life that she wants to live. And when I look at my life and I wake up and I think, I literally dreamt about living this life that I live. And specifically, the best part about it is I get to do what I want to do every day. I never gave up on the idea of I can design this life that I want to live. I can work even part-time and run two businesses. I can take the summer off and be with my daughter every day. I can work from home. I can build a business with my husband, have our family together all of the time. I have this, everything I do every day, I choose to do and I love to do. And that's because there's this funny quote that my husband always references. If you do what you got to do when you got to do it, you can do what you want to do when you want to do it. And so two part, I want people to never give up on the dream life, but you're going to need help in designing it, right? You're going to need other people to help you figure out what that looks like, ideas and innovation and living differently. But also I put in the time and the work to get here. I gave up a lot of things. I compromised, I sacrificed, I endured. I probably lost maybe a couple years off my life with getting that done early, so that now I get to enjoy it.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the work that you've done. Tell me about some of your habits. So someone listening to you, you just have an incredible life. You've built it yourself from the ground up. What are some of the keys to sustained excellence? What are some of the habits that you say, here are some of the things that I've done day in and day out, rain or shine. I've gotten up, I put in the work, I put in the grind to build the life that I want. What are some of those sustained habit practices that you've built in?
That's such a tricky thing. Motivation waxes and wanes, right? So I think part of the hack of it is figuring out how to reignite that motivation and focus. I have always been really disciplined. I don't know if that is nature versus nurture. Discipline is it. A small same routine every morning really does it for me. Having one thing that's consistent in every day helps prevent the chaos. But being the best at everything, constantly figuring out where that marker is, that's a tough question. It changes. It's always about, I'm different now than I was 10 years ago. What motivates me now? So perhaps that's the answer, is being really so in touch and self-aware that what motivates you and how to get back on track, how to find discipline again, how to stay consistent. Now I know I've hired a team around me that also will call me out on that. You might be falling off here. Do you need some time to recalibrate? And I'm like, oh, you're right, I do.
Yeah. I know that exercise is a big part of this for you. Talk to us a little bit about exercise, and it's going to tie into some of the amazing, crazy things that you're doing.
Exercise, I have said many times to many people that it saved my life over and over.
Right.
Exercise is when you start your day or finish your day, whenever you do it in your day, it's generally the hardest part of your day. And there's something to be said for doing something so hard that builds not just physical resilience, but mental resilience. And I noticed it gave me an extra edge. If I did that, then I can have this difficult conversation. It feels the same emotionally as it does physically. So I think that training became really important. I noticed a significant improvement in my courage and approach to difficult conversations with people or whatever I had to do with work when I was training really hard. So I do a blend of CrossFit and weightlifting. My husband and I met at our gym back home and got married. So it's special to me that we met doing that, and we do it together. I love hard, challenging CrossFit workouts because it's just messy and gritty and difficult, right? It's just suffering together. We have a group of friends right now that have this suffer Sunday thing going on where we all get together and suffer. And the premise is that suffering makes us better. And it really just gives you perspective on everything else. So the other thing that's so great about this life that we've built is I have time to train for things. My husband convinced me to train for the tactical game. So I'm training for that in May, and my husband is teaching me to shoot. So I just started shooting in January, and he's a professional. He's been wonderful to work with. We actually work really well together, but most husband and wife will tell you they cannot train together. They cannot learn from their husband or wife shooting. It's funny that you hear about that often. So my husband and I were diving into like, well, why is it that it's working? And we just have a real close awareness around the vulnerability of learning something new. It's been a while since I've tried something new. CrossFit was a number of years ago, and that was vulnerable and intimidating. And shooting has been so vulnerable and so intimidating because I knew nothing about it. So the sensitivity of it when we're learning something new, and that translates to everything in life, parenting, coaching, leadership, building a business, the vulnerability of it is we just have to be so sensitive to it. And my husband is really gifted at that. When we feel stupid, we're so vulnerable. And if someone makes you feel stupid in that moment, the likelihood of you quitting and never coming back is real high. Right. And so the awareness of that, one, my awareness of, I feel stupid and I want to say something mean to you because I'm stupid. And the awareness for him of, I'm not going to make a correction just yet because I can tell that she's really struggling through this or she feels really stupid, or I'm going to get ahead of that vulnerability and I'm going to tell her, when we step in, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. This is the safety brief. He's going to get ahead of it. So I don't even have that moment of feeling vulnerable or insecure. Yeah. It's pretty incredible to think about that.
I like how you're linking the hard things to the hard things. So the hard thing in CrossFit or workout, I just listened to. So Ryan Hawk is my favorite podcast host, the learning leader. He just had a guest on that talked about this very thing, that he talked about the effort paradox. And the effort paradox is the hard things tend to teach us the most. It's not the easy things. It's not the super sunny, wonderful vacations you remember the most. It's the hard things that are our greatest teachers, the effort paradox. And what you're saying is, man, if I can get up in the morning and do whatever CrossFit craziness, I can later have that hard conversation with an employee who is subpar because I know how to do hard things. Just because I know how to do hard things, that can cross many different parts of my life. I can parent better, I can coach better, I can train better, I can learn better. Another thing I wrote down, so I'm picking up some of your keys to your own excellence. So you talked about don't avoid the hard thing, do the hard thing. Then you have figure out your gift, sit in your sweet spot. You talk about surrounding yourself with excellent people. And you talked about learning something new all the time, so being a lifelong learner. So you're giving us some clues about your own sustained excellence. Be a lifelong learner, surround yourself with great people, do the hard thing, because if you can do it in one area, you can do hard things everywhere. Keep learning, surround yourself with great people. Let's close with this, Jackie. You're an amazing, I respect you. You inspire me. I respect you greatly. What advice would you give to, let's say, a young lady who's just coming out of college or trade school, or she wants to quit the corporate world and she's 22 or 25 and she wants to begin her journey, or it doesn't have to be a young lady. I know that you're focused. What advice would you give to that young person now that you're a decade down the road? Here's the advice I'd give to you as you start your entrepreneurial career. What would you say?
Know yourself so well, constantly, through your whole life. That's an ongoing battle. I spend as much time understanding who I am and how I'm wired and how I operate, just as much time doing that as I do tending to my relationships, marriage, businesses, and never giving up on what feels right to you, what you want. When you are doing a job that just is okay, that's not it for you. Don't give up on that dream. Don't listen to anybody else. Don't let anybody tell you no. Don't let anybody tell you what to do. You know in your gut, right? That's it. I know what feels right to me in my gut, and I have to follow that, but I have to know myself first.
Jackie, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your brilliance, your story, your hardship, your climb. Listen, if you're listening to this and you need an exceptional accounting firm, reach out to Jackie, reach out to me. I'll connect you. If you're in the Tacoma area and you want a great job and an amazing place to work at Andrews Fixtures, same thing, man. She's building something amazing. Jackie, thank you for your time. You're a wonderful woman. I'm honored to know you. Thank you for inspiring me and all of my listeners.
Thank you. Likewise, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Leader's Edge. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please go to podcast.yourleadersedge.com. We truly believe that leaders change the world. You can help with this by sharing this podcast. I'd be very grateful if you shared this episode across all your social media platforms. Don't hesitate to rate and review us as well. This helps us get seen and heard so others can sharpen their own leadership. Our mission is to interrogate reality, provoke creativity, and inspire change. By doing this, we believe we can change the world one leader at a time. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to The Leader's Edge and connect with us on social media. Also, check us out at yourleadersedge.com. Once again, I'm HR Huntsman. Thank you for joining us. Have an amazing day.